474 lectures on ancient philosophy. Entire social order is at hazard. It has been demonstrated that the powers of evil, unable to lean upon the infinite which was presumably against them, have developed the pernicious habit of depending upon themselves and each other, with the result that virtue is a disorganized and vice a well-regulated institution. Friendship has failed, first, because men could not understand it and hence degraded it to a tool of interest, secondly, because to the average individual it is an artificial relation, established in an effort to create a condition which did not naturally exist. Men have mouthed the word until it has become obnoxious and synonymous with the vagaries of a decadent faith. As yet we have not reached that point in our spiritual unfoldment where universal friendship is apparent to us. When you tell a man that friendship exists in nature and that God has decreed his creations to live together in amicable relations, he may point to the jungle law where every animal lurks behind a bush ready to devour the passerby. Or he may ask you to explain the earthquake or the storm, and the host of natural agencies which conceal their affinity for each other so successfully that only a theologian can hope to discover them. The new message is the gospel of identity. It is not an effort to unite lives in a common interest, but a recognition of the fact that all forms are but manifestations of one indivisible agent. According to this concept, there are no longer two who can be friends, but rather one that cannot be divided, and in whom the sense of diversity is an illusion of form and not a reality of spirit. No longer must we conceive of that type of friendship in which several parts fraternize, and all too often patronize, but rather that indissoluble unity which is fundamental throughout the universe. To the wise, however, this is not one life working against another, but the parts of one life moving upon each other. Cataclysms possibly evidence a magnified form of those same inconsistencies which man manifests when he deliberately injures some part of his own body for the gratification of a whim. The gospel of identity is not one that can be thundered from the pulpits, preached. The goal of philosophy 475. From the housetops or harangued in the marketplace. It is something that must come to be realized, that must be felt within the nature itself. It is that fundamental unity of each with all, that power which discovers all things within the self, and the self within all things. The gospel of tomorrow will be a gospel of one being. No longer will a million universes or billions of half-formed creatures struggle out the destiny of worms, no longer will there be a seemingly endless, crawling, seething mass of minute lives, for out of his two shido heaven has come the Lord of tomorrow, the Sovereign of eternity, whose doctrine is that of identity. The star and the gnat will be united, suspended as it were from a single monad, one in essence, though several in aspect. No longer will there be the great and the small, but one spirit moving inevitably toward itself. No longer will there be a great order of evolving lives, but rather one ideating whole, an expression moving from it self outward to the inclusion of all. Today we live in an involuting civilization, a civilization of separateness, a world dedicated to the concept of struggling with the parts of itself, a world obsessed with the illusion that the self has parts. We must overcome the belief that self can rise up against its own nature, or that spirit is fragmentary, for that one man should compete with another is as senseless as that the fingers should fight the hands to which they are attached, or dissent from each other as to their individual supremacy. From the condition of primitive isolation, man has raised himself through successive revelations to a limited capacity to understand the issues of life. A few broad-minded, far-seeing individuals have recognized the fundamental equality of life, and have issued an Emancipation Proclamation declaring all creatures by right of their divine origin to be entitled to a place in the sun. From equality it is but a logical step to identity. So the enlightened man who has been elevated to that point where, when he meets another man, he says, "You are my friend," will tomorrow meet that same man and say, "You are myself." No longer will complicated codes be necessary. Sorry to administer human affairs when each man's interest. 476 Lectures on Ancient Philosophy becomes the interest of all the rest, and each man's needs the needs of all. Laws are largely established to govern relationships, but when all relationships are done away with, laws will pass with them, for the one is always itself, and the intervals for which theoretical relationships are remedial agencies cannot exist in a united body. An intellectual concept of the gospel of identity is not sufficient. In fact, intellectualism is the trap by which most minds are ensnared. A fact is not established by the intellect, but by a deeper power which we like to term realization. Hence the truth of identity is demonstrated by the realization of identity. Never will we have true equality until we realize that equality is based upon identity, for that which is self is equal to self. And upon the appreciation of this fact, democracy is established. Democracy is not the condescending, patronizing attitude of the politician, nor is it the system whereby 100 million folk of uncertain mind are empowered to elect one from their number as their leader. Democracy is the realization of the unity of life, and this realization shatters forever the competitive standard of civilization, which is based upon the erroneous assumption that one part of life can survive without or at the expense of another. Competition was founded upon the dualistic theory, an ancient anthropomorphism in which two spirits wage an endless fight for supremacy. So wherever two individuals, institutions, or nations conceive a separate origin or a separate destiny, we have the boast that one will be holier than the other. As long as we conceive of separateness in origin and ultimate, there will be grounds for competition, and upon the basis of competition is erected the whole structure of human sorrow. We have an age, therefore, in which the parts struggle with each other, a world that thinks it has accomplished greatly when it picks its right pocket to fill its left pocket. Diversity is simply the manifestation of those potentialities that are ever within the substance of unity. The universe is simply the objectification of a single causal agent. This does not imply that all things are alike, but rather that while they may differ, the goal of philosophy 477. In non-essentials, as, for example, external composition, they are composed of the same agencies and essences. The gospel of identity includes the theory of difference, not difference from the standpoint of inequality but from the standpoint of condition. The philosopher does not infer that a gnat is a star, but that in their essential natures each is the manifestation of a common life, and that whatever may occur to one is registered in the single life principle that agitates them both. We have a civilization in which each part is attempting to include the whole within itself. Man as an individual dreams of the day when he can dominate men as a mass, failing to realize that such dominance is in appearance only, and that the individual can never be more than he is, one of the many. Through consciousness he may elevate himself to the point where he and the many are one, but having achieved this exalted goal he ceases to be himself and becomes the many thinking in the terms of the many and serving the ends of the many. The gospel of identity shows man his true greatness, namely, that he possesses the power to interpret the whole and can actually come to realize his kinship with all. Through such realization, he achieves philosophic liberation. He who escapes from the littleness which is his not-self, into the vastness which is his real self, achieves greatly and serves the sovereign good. There is but one cure for selfishness, namely, to realize that nothing can be added to us and nothing taken from us, that we are what we are and have what we have. We may temporarily possess a certain measure of opulence, but unless it is our own, it will depart from us again. Yet in departing it is not gone, for that which is the possession of any one is ultimately the possession of all. What use, then, can there be for selfishness when he who believes that he takes from another really takes from himself? And why should not a man be generous when that which he gives to another he gives to himself? In philosophy there is consequently neither giver nor receiver, in that the gift, the giver, and the receiver are one. The spirit in man is not merely a life enclosed within a frame. Man is really a frame enclosed within a spirit. The thing in 478 Lectures on Ancient Philosophy. You that says I am is identical with the thing in me that says I am. Then why should we not unite in common purpose? Why should we struggle for a little outer glory and battle with shadows in the service of our greeds? If he so desires, each individual by receding into his own divine nature may discover within himself the divine nature of all creatures. He may even become every other creature, for that part of himself which is real is every other creature. In the annihilation of the sense of separateness we annihilate both life and death, for when we identify ourselves with the one life moving through all things, how can we end? As long as there is life, WCR that life, as long as a single star twinkles in the heavens we are that star, as long as a single blade of grass grows we are that blade of grass. We are not of the same race as those hands and feet which we have so long identified with ourselves. We are not that driveling creature, clutching at power, that mad thing of destruction which tears and rends in childish rage and harbors revenge within its heart. When we have recognized the universality of spirit, we are one with the very fabric of life, and are no longer tortured with fears and premonitions. In our folly we have tried to be petty pots and establish empires of our own. We have desired the gold braid and tinsel of princes, and are peevish when someone takes away our principality. Let us turn from our petty potism to behold that greater glory which is our natural right, for we are citizens of eternity, we are that very life that in the beginning moved upon the face of the deep, we are that shining power that walked in the garden with the Lord, we are the seraphim and the cherubim and the choirs of the ineffable. We are not gods, we are God exiled for a little while into the forgetfulness of ourselves, yet soon to awaken to the full measure of our splendor. O slumbering life, awake from your dreams of manyness, and soar into the free air of concord. Turn from the wheels that you have set spinning in the building of an ephemeral empire. Depart from the unsubstantialness which you have come to love too well, and lift your eyes to the contemplation